Once a loss happens, going into getting pregnant again can be completely different, right? There's a lot more anxiety, there's a lot more fear, there can be more hypervigilance. It's not your fault, first and foremost. Like, you need to know that. You didn't do anything wrong. So the biggest question I get is, when can I try again? Welcome back to Healthy as a Mother. I'm your co-host, Dr. Leah Gordon, and this is the show for becoming and being a mother, where Dr. Morgan and I share the natural women's health and motherhood guidance you've been looking for through a fresh, functional, and balanced lens. And today's episode is really tender and trigger warning if anyone has had a pregnancy loss. We are talking about conceiving after pregnancy loss, what that journey looks like from choosing what intervention if you are going through a loss, to what to do in between, how long to wait, what to look at and optimize from a mental, emotional, physical, and spiritual perspective. So this can feel really heavy if you've gone through it, but also very supportive if you are looking for that guidance and you're not really getting it elsewhere. So without further ado, let's talk about conceiving after pregnancy loss.
Welcome back, everybody. We have an episode for you today that is going to apply to many of you because a lot of people have had a loss at some point, a miscarriage, way more common than we think, unfortunately, always heartbreaking and really hard. And as a part of motherhood, we talk about everything on this podcast. So, I mean, trigger warning in case that's something you're going through right now, you don't want to hear this. In this episode, we're going to be talking about getting pregnant again. So conception after having had a pregnancy loss. And Dr. Leah is going to lead us through this one. And we're going to go through a lot of different things to be thinking about, including, you know, the mental, emotional, also the physiological, biological reasons and different things like that. So things you can do, but it's more about, it's a whole body, mind, body, spirit episode. So why don't we just take it away right away?
Yeah. So for anyone who's listening, who has experienced a loss, obviously it's so sad and everyone's experience of it is different. Some people, it is devastating. Some people feel like, you know, it's okay and I'm ready to move on. Some people had early loss early on in their pregnancy. Some it was much later. And so wherever you are along that journey, just know that it's all okay. All of your feelings are okay, no matter what you're feeling, whether it feels really, really hard or you're like less connected to it and ready to try again, because I've had all of those different experiences and everything in between. So first, I just want to acknowledge that, you know, emotional piece. And the going into trying again can be tricky, because if it was your first loss or if you've had multiple, you know, there's excitement that can happen if you either get pregnant accidentally or if you were trying and got pregnant. There's this newness, this exciting part of being pregnant, and it's, you know, it's all new and fun and kind of novel. And I would say most people, unless they've had a loss previously, don't really have that on their mind unless it's something that they are around with friends or family. But then once a loss happens, going into getting pregnant again can be completely different, right? There's a lot more anxiety. There's a lot more fear. There can be more hypervigilance, just pressure of trying again. You know, there's lots of things that can come up. And so I have a lot of women in my womanhood wellness membership that have had a pregnancy loss. And the number one thing they almost all say with what they need the most support is the emotional part and the emotional piece and not feeling alone. So I just want you to know that you are not alone. Sadly, it's 1 in 4 pregnancies that end in a loss. It feels like it's more than it should be, and that when no one should ever have that experience. But you are not alone, even though it feels like a very lonely experience. So if you are looking for people to connect with on this journey, consider joining my membership to find women who are in this same place. But I would say the number one reason, or I guess I'll ask you, I mean, what did you feel after your losses before you started trying again?
The first miscarriage that I had was between babies 1 and 2, and that one completely rocked my world. I think because I extrapolated out a lot of meaning behind it, that like I was never going to have another child. Like, oh, what if I have secondary infertility? What if, you know, this like one perfect baby boy that I have is going to be my only child? I don't know. Like, that was really, really hard. And it all had just been very kind of idealistic up to that point because we'd gotten pregnant the first time that we tried with Gage. And then the first time that we tried again to get pregnant with that baby that we lost, we did get pregnant. And I was like, oh my gosh, like this is just wonderful. Everything's going to be going great. And then I started bleeding at like almost 6 weeks. And it was like a very full on, very crampy, clotty, tons of tissue. I was just very surprised by the pain. I'm not somebody who has painful periods. So I was really like, wow, okay. I mean, this thing has not been in there for that long. And this is a lot of stuff, and it was very heavy. It was like 9 days of bleeding. And anyway, I think I had a lot of fear around what it meant, and that was my main thing. I was sad to be losing that baby, but that wasn't really where my mind, I mean, I don't know, that sounds kind of weird, but my
No, it
mind
doesn't. I'm
revolved.
saying everyone has a very different experience. I hear that a lot. Some people, it's like I lost my child, and other people are like, oh, I wasn't even really thinking much about the baby. It's more like all these other things that are happening.
Yeah, to me, I wasn't really thinking that much about the baby, honestly. I was like, oh my gosh, can I never have more? And you know, it's so funny. It's like one thing happens and then you make it have all this meaning. But anyway, so that was that. And then with my second one, well, so then I didn't get my cycle back for like a m month or like I had a weird long cycle. And then we tried. I think we kind of started trying right away, or we just weren't preventing, and we conceived again within like 3 or 4 cycles. It was really quick. And in that time, like each month that I got a period again where we had been trying and it didn't, I was like freaking out. And this was a little, I mean, it was only 3 or 4 months, but you know how it is. It's like you just, I think I just started to, it was like running up a hill where like the loose rocks are coming down on top of you, like you're not really going anywhere. And I was just like spinning my wheels out. The month that we ended up getting pregnant, I was like, I cannot, I'm not tracking any of this stuff. I'm not doing this. I'm just like, not that I gave up, but I was sort of like, I just need a break from thinking about this all the time because it had only been like 3, you know what I mean? Serious. It was seriously no time, but I was in mental suffering. So then we did conceive, and then it is a very different experience being pregnant after you've had a loss because you're very worried and wary the whole time and not attached. It like I wouldn't let myself get attached very much. Like, okay, I don't know. I'm hoping. But it was different where my intuition was settled. Like I felt very confident that that pregnancy was going to make it, and then it did. Then I got pregnant again and lost the one between numbers 2 and 3. So I had kind of told myself a story that I have a pattern where I have a child and then I have a miscarriage and then I have a child and then I have a miscarriage because that's how it had happened for me. And that one, I was only 10 months postpartum. I was still breastfeeding. And it was like a fraction of the mental torment as the first one. I think mostly because I was like, whoa, I honestly probably was not even ready to be pregnant again. We did try. We were like, let's have these, you know, we wanted 3 kids at that time. And so we were like, let's bust out numbers 2 and 3, be really close. But when I started to actually on that one, I was taking pregnancy tests every day because I'm like a serial test taker. And I noticed the line was getting fainter. And that's how I had my first clue before I even started bleeding. And so I was like, oh, I know that this is happening. And I had very little symptoms. I had some blood sugar stuff, but I didn't have any like breast tenderness or nausea. Or, I don't know. And it was again, the same thing, like right around 6 weeks, or before. It was before. I didn't get quite to 6 weeks. And it was like a much, it was more like a normal period. So that baby, I don't think developed very much. It wasn't clotty and it wasn't painful. So that was kind of strange. It was more like a chemical pregnancy. But my mindset around it was like, okay, well, I know that my body can have a miscarriage and then I can also still get pregnant again. And so that's why I think it was easier. You know, I didn't tell
That
myself a
makes sense.
story that I'm never going to have a baby again. And then same thing, we conceived within like 4 months of trying. I don't really remember a lot of that about that beginning of that third pregnancy, but when I remember though getting pregnant with Sunday, and she was, you know, kind of like an oops. And I knew right away, even though it would have been my pattern to lose that pregnancy, had it, you know, if my story had been correct that I had told myself, which was really just a story, right? But with her pregnancy, everything about the lead up prior to like knowing there was a fourth baby, and then of course not even choosing when she was coming in, and it all, I was just like, it was happening to me kind of, and I had 100% confidence that everything was going to be fine with her. And I did not even get an ultrasound until the anatomy scan. I was like,
Oh, I didn't know
nope. Like, I never got a heartbeat confirmation of ultrasound. I was like, I know that this baby is fine. Like, I
That's
know
crazy.
this one wants to be here so badly that, you know, the way she came in and blah, 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 all this different stuff. And so that was really interesting because, whereas this baby, this fifth baby, I felt confident that they were there. But because of me, I was so sick when I first conceived that I was very nervous and I wanted to see it. And so I did get another ultrasound. But anyway, yeah. So to me, the mental anguish was around, is this my pattern forever? Am I ever going to be able to grow my family? That was kind of the main thing I was stuck on.
No, that makes sense. And it sounds like for you, it was more what does this mean versus grieving a child, which I know for some people, it's like after they've already seen the ultrasound, they've seen the heartbeat, the baby's growing, it's second trimester even.
Oh, I can't
Ugh,
imagine.
like I can't even imagine. I have not had that experience, so I can't speak to it. You know, we can't get pregnant on our own naturally, so we have lost an embryo, a transfer. And so, you know, I know the loss of, I imagined this person being a part of our family. You know, I imagined that little girl being my daughter's sister and having two girls and, you know, the whole story of the life that I thought I would have, and the grieving of that, and the grieving of her, who it's weird in IVF when you make embryos. Like to me, I felt like I had four babies. You know, we had four embryos. And so I was like, oh, yeah, I have four babies. This one's Earthside. There's three more in the freezer, you know, and then I'm going to bring the next one Earthside. And so that for me was a grieving because I had made her so long ago. You know, it was like years that I had her in my energetic area, like my sphere, that she was sort of there. And I was so confident because my first transfer was Avia and it was successful. And I was really naive at that point that, you know, we have ultimate control over everything and we don't. And so when our pregnancy ended up not, you know, surviving, I was devastated. Like that was really, really hard for me. And then I had a fear, not only like you, but you know, like we can't just keep having sex tons of times and like keep trying and you know, loss and then getting pregnant again. Like there's this finite number of babies that we have to pick, you know, from to build our family, and that pressure is really great. So there's just so many different experiences of people, you know, having recurrent pregnancy loss, never having a baby, having babies in between, going through IVF. So just want to give reverence to anybody who's going through that, like I said, and all of your feelings and emotions are valid. And I would say the number one thing that people ask me is like, why? Why did this happen? People want to know why sometimes, I guess, maybe not. But it's tricky. We don't have a crystal ball. We can't go back and know every single thing. But most of the time, losses are from chromosomal abnormalities in the baby, in the embryo. And outside of IVF PGT testing, if you conceive naturally, there's really not a way to know that going into it. If you are going through a loss, there are circumstances where you can test the chromosomes of the baby that has been lost to see if that is what's going on. Not everybody opts to do that, not everybody is able to do that. But that is something if that would bring you peace of mind. But at the end of the day, if it is a chromosomal abnormality, there's not much that you can do, obviously, about that pregnancy. Sometimes chromosomal abnormalities are total flukes, like they're just random. There's literally no rhyme or reason for it. But sometimes it can come down to the quality of the eggs and the sperm. So both eggs and sperm contribute to the chromosomes of an embryo. And so that is where there's this fine balance when we are talking about getting pregnant after loss, where it's not your fault, first and foremost. Like, you need to know that. You didn't do anything wrong. You didn't manifest this. You didn't cause it from exercise or from what you ate. Like, I don't want anyone to think that they did this. There's also, it's such a fine line that we juggle because sometimes the body does give us clues that there are places that we can optimize to potentially not have it happen again. And we can get into the spiritual meaning of miscarriage and when it is that a baby, you know, when a soul enters the baby. And, you know, there's lots of stuff that I have my own personal beliefs and everybody has their different personal beliefs. But I believe sometimes, you know, maybe there was a lesson that needed to be learned. Not always, but maybe sometimes, that maybe that baby was never meant to be here earthside, but that it brought you a gift in a beautiful way. And, you know, I know that that can feel dismissal for some people, but for some people it brings them a lot of peace, that maybe there's literally nothing you could have done. That, like, this was literally part of your
story. Yeah, I can think of a couple of different friends that we have who've had miscarriages, and that is their takeaway. And so although it doesn't, it's not going to land for everybody, like if it feels, yeah, like you said, dismissive and you're rolling your eyes or whatever at that part, just know that, okay, it doesn't resonate for you, but it actually does for some people. It really,
yeah.
Maybe it's to show them, like one I can think of is it was the push in the lesson of, oh, I actually do not want to have kids with him. Because there was an abusive relationship happening that needed to end. And it was like the catalyst for her to finally leave. You know, like people have very complex things that are going on in their life. So I just wanted to give like a couple of, you know, to say that, because some people are going to be like, how could you ever say that? And it's like, well, first of all, this is outside of our control. And second of all, your interpretation of the meaning of it can be in many different ways. There's no right or wrong way to look at it, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And again, like, everyone can take or leave what they will, but I'll just share openly what I think and feel about certain things, which is, I believe that we as souls kind of pick to some extent what our life is going to be like in this life. You know, to some extent we pick our parents and our circumstances, the lessons, the body. You know, it's possible that I personally believe that our soul and our body, they come together, but there is a body that is separate from your soul. Mm-hmm. So like when the baby is being made, like the embryo, the soul would come in and like attach and be integrated in that. But like, let's say, I don't know, you get pregnant and that embryo little body would have been disabled or something. And like the soul that's coming doesn't want a disabled body, or maybe the soul does want a disabled body, or to have Down syndrome, or to whatever. Like there could be reasons that are so beyond just what is the physical and what we are doing and controlling and micromanaging, that it could also be things like, I had an intuitive tell me this, like we thought we're playing God, right? With IVF, of we choose which embryo we pick, which it's not like I did IVF to be able to pick which embryo goes first and second. It's just like, you literally have to pick. They're like, okay, which one now do you want to transfer? It's so weird. And so in my mind, I'm like, well, I would like a girl next, you know? And so we did that. But then I had been told that my son really needed to be second. Like for his soul path and what he needed to be second. And so in my mind, it's like, could I have saved that baby if we had transferred her later? I don't know. Like maybe she was never meant to be here earthside. Like I was never meant to maybe have another biological female child. It, like there's so many things to unravel and unpack there. But when people ask why, you know, we can definitely talk about physical things, but I do believe working in fertility for this long that there is so much more at play than just the physical, egg and sperm coming together and making things. Like I think that there is our own soul's path, other souls' paths, and even adjacent souls, you know, like maybe your mother is supposed to have the loss of a grandchild. Like it doesn't even have to do with you and your soul's path. Like there's so many people at play. And so it brought me a lot of peace to just know that there are other things at play and we don't always know the answer. Mm-hmm. And I hold that at the same exact time that I hold, how do we also ask bigger questions and do as much as we can on the physical realm and the mental, emotional realm, so that if it is meant for the soul to come and be a part of our lives, that we have set ourselves up as optimally for that. And then everything else, you know, we surrender to the divine, whatever it is that we believe in, God, you know, source, whatever. So when we talk about the physical parts, this is where quality of egg and sperm matter. We're going to get into that a little bit later. There's also hormones at play that play a role in pregnancy loss, in particular progesterone. We talk at length about progesterone on this podcast, but it's so important. And sometimes a loss is because there wasn't enough progesterone. I mean, it's as simple as that. And is there still a lesson there? Was there still some spiritual component potentially, you know? And if you get on adequate progesterone, you might have a totally healthy pregnancy the next time around. You know, there's things that are that physical, you know, that can then be playing a role. Things like thyroid can play a role in miscarriage and loss, blood sugar instability. There can be autoimmune or immune issues. So if you have autoimmunity in your body, if you have any sort of chronic infections going on in your uterus or your vagina, things like this can impact the growth of the embryo. Inflammation just in general. So if you have a lot of inflammation going on, clotting is a very common cause of loss. If you have hereditary clotting issues or just clotting issues within yourself, sometimes that will prevent pregnancy from happening at all. Or sometimes the pregnancy can happen, and then once it's growing more and the placenta needs more blood flow and the baby needs more blood flow, the clotting becomes more of a factor then. And so that is absolutely another common cause that, again, as physical and crazy as it sounds, you can get on something like baby aspirin and then you're totally fine and you can have healthy babies because you are addressing that clotting factor. There can be physical elements like a fibroid or a polyp or some sort of physical blockage or adhesion that maybe it allowed the embryo to implant but not grow. So yeah, there's just a lot of reasons why, and that's not an extensive list. I mean, we could go into so many, but those are kind of the big hitter ones. And
Well, we have a whole episode too that we'll have linked in the show notes that's like the top 8 or 9 reasons for pregnancy loss. And then we have the progesterone episode. We have a miscarriage decoded episode. So the show notes will be rich with further education too around some of that if anyone wants to dive in.
So the biggest question I get is when can I try again? So I've had a loss, and a lot of this depends on what happened during your loss. So there are a couple different ways that people can, I hate calling it the products of conception. It
I
sounds
know,
so
I hate
sterile.
it.
It's like the worst, but it's also like, what else do you say? So it's just so hard to talk about, right? Like this is so sad, and especially depending on where you are along your pregnancy, this can be very traumatizing, right? But basically, you are typically given three major options. One is that once you know that you're having a miscarriage and or you know that, you know, the baby is no longer viable, it can just pass naturally. You know, you kind of have to just wait. Sometimes women realize they're having a miscarriage because they start bleeding. They're already passing, you know, tissue and clots and things like that. They've checked, there's no heartbeat, you know, that whole thing. And so they know it's happening. Sometimes there's been a loss and you're not yet bleeding. And so people will just say, well, you can just wait, you know, wait for it to start naturally. And that can be really emotional for some people to just be like, okay, so I'm not pregnant anymore. The baby's inside of me and I have to just wait for this to just happen on its own. And then you're basically going into labor of, you know, of a sort. And it can be really intense. The other option is taking medications like misoprostol or methotrexate. There's different things that are medications that will induce the passing of the baby, and that has its own pros and cons, you know, also tricky. Some can be drawn out, can be challenging. And then there's something like a DNC where they go in and basically scrape out dilation and curettage. They scrape out all of the tissue, which again, it just sounds so sad and terrible, like to call a baby tissue. I mean, there's more than just the baby there, you know. Babies are quite little at this point, unless it's a way late term loss. And none of them are perfect, right? People ask me this all the time. They're like, what is the best way? Like, what do I do? And how I break it down for them is honestly, it really depends on you and your heart and what your goals are. And none of them are perfect. So waiting naturally can feel better for some people if they need time, if they need time to process, if they're like not ready for the baby to go, like if they really don't want to have any intervention, if that feels really icky to them, like there's so many reasons for that. But the con of that is that it can be a really long time. And maybe you are ready for this to be over and you are ready for this to be behind you, yet you have to just wait, not like for nature to take its course and like do this whole thing. And that can be really traumatizing, you know, for some people.
There's also the longer that it goes on, and you know, there's not perfect stats around this, but waiting a couple of weeks is reasonable if there's no signs of infection or anything like that, but it can become infected, the tissue. And there is a risk that you just need to know about of like sepsis or infection. Mm-hmm. I think that, but you know, you hear about people like missed miscarriages are really interesting to me though, because sometimes people can go on for with a missed miscarriage for like 6-8 weeks. And you know, they go in for their 12-week ultrasound. The baby had stopped growing at 6 weeks. So that means that it's a missed miscarriage of the body just has not reacted to the fact that the baby has passed and nothing negative is going on. She's not having an infection or getting septic or anything like that. And that's a long time, 6 weeks. But sometimes when you know you have a passed baby in there, the doctors will act like, oh, we gotta, you, it's not safe for you to wait. And I'm like, well, time out. Like what, when she, you know, when she doesn't know, sometimes they're waiting a lot longer. So I think we need to just remember that there's a probably a greater window and there's ways to monitor and things too, in case you were wanting it to happen naturally, because like the downsides of medication or surgery are there. So you got to look at it from all angles.
Yeah, exactly. And then when you take the medication, one thing people don't always realize is that you take the medications to induce contractions and to induce the passing of the baby and the tissue. And so you are typically still at home experiencing like a loss, you know, like there's bleeding and it's painful and it can be really traumatic and things can come out in the toilet and it's like so sad. So it's not like you take a medication and it just dissolves and goes away and you'd never have to have that experience.
That's just something that that seems to always surprise people. And how painful it can be, how quick the medications can work. And just within a couple of hours, they're having really intense contractions and a lot of blood. And, you know, it's just important to get a really good, have a good conversation with your provider about where, what are the markers of concern? Like how much blood is too much blood? When you might need to come back in for monitoring or things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And just making sure you have really good emotional support if you choose that option. I mean, obviously, if you are having a spontaneous loss, you know, it's just like you woke up and you're bleeding and it's already happening. Like, it's not like you're like, hey, I like have all these people on, you know, call order to like come and be with me. But if you are choosing the medication, like it's, you know, take time off work. It's going to be a process and just be aware of that. The DNC option, for some people, this can be the best option because they don't have to actually go through the pain and the loss, but it is a surgery. Typically, you are put under general anesthesia. There's typically antibiotics involved just because it is a surgical procedure. The benefit of a DNC, though, is that you definitely know they got all the tissue. So that is the one thing that I always bring up to people is if you choose natural and or medication, there's always a risk of retained tissue. And that can be a problem if you want to get pregnant again, and especially quickly getting pregnant again, because you might have passed everything naturally and thought everything was good to go. And now you're back to trying and you're trying and trying and trying and trying and trying, and months go by and months go by. And it's like, okay, well, was there something that we missed, or do you have an infection kind of thing now, or what's going on? And so the DNC can be helpful in that regard, where you know it's like cleaned out the uterus, it's scraped it off, it's kind of starting fresh. You just, you know, there's pros and cons to all of them. None of them are perfect. I do know from my IVF world that I had a polyp both times when I had to try to go in for embryo transfer. And my doctor, Dr. Chang at Hanabusa, said that he often recommends DNCs to his patients before a transfer, because that scraping of the uterus sort of primes the uterus really well to hold that embryo. And if he's had failed losses or like loss failures or whatever, sometimes he'll just recommend it prophylactically to kind of scrape out the uterus and kind of just start fresh. And I had a polyp, so I had to do it anyways, but it kind of made me feel better about having to do that, because I was like, oh, there's kind of some added benefit of, he said within 3 months-ish of having a DNC is the best adherence that they see for having an embryo to stick basically post DNC. So Again, you have to take an antibiotic, but you can take probiotics, but there could be some benefit there. And that's something I do bring up with clients who are asking me these questions to think about as well. If you take something like methotrexate, which is a medication, it does deplete your folate, your folic acid, and it's typically not recommended for you to get pregnant for at least 3 months after that, and you need to be taking extra higher dose folate or folic acid. Obviously, they'll give you folic acid because it's conventional medicine and stuff. But, folate, methylfolate is probably a better choice, but either one, you have to be on folate because it will deplete your folate, and you do not want to get pregnant again if you have no folate, because that's what causes neural tube defects. And it's a really big deal. So you do not want to take the medication, especially methotrexate, and then 1 month later hop into getting pregnant again. Like, that is not a good idea.
Yeah, thanks for saying
So
that.
these are other.
And too, like
Yeah.
most of the time people will take methotrexate only if the baby is very early or ectopic. Misoprostol would be
Yes.
sort of in those middle weeks, and then the DNC, they can't do misoprostol when it's too big. So the DNC would be maybe offered younger ages too, or like younger gestational age too, but will be for, closer to the second trimester and then beyond. So there's sort of, it's not like you have all three options available to you at any point. You are
At all
gonna kind
times,
of have, based on your age, the age of the baby, what like the top recommendation form is. So just want to say that too.
yeah, exactly. Yep, that's such a good point. Yeah, it's not always methotrexate is the medication that is very common in ectopic pregnancies and things like that. But just important to know, in case that is
Yes.
what's given to you, that in those situations, for sure, you need to wait at least 3 months. So a lot of people say, well, how soon can I try again? With a DNC, again, I would say minimum. I mean, I know a lot of people jump back in like the next month. I would personally say a minimum of 2 months after a loss, at least,
Me too.
to try again. I just think that the body needs time to rebalance. Ideally, if you're not, I mean, everyone's in a huge rush when you're trying to get pregnant. Trust me, I've been there. I know. Ideally, in my world, anytime something happens, whether it's a positive thing like a new treatment protocol or a negative thing, 3 months is sort of the time that the body kind of resets itself hormonally. Your lining is getting shifted, your nutrients get repleted. So if you can do 3 months after a loss before trying again, that's what I'd recommend, but minimum two, in my opinion. I'm not a huge fan of, I literally just had a loss, I am trying next cycle to get pregnant. People do that all the time and they get pregnant often, It's just, if I had a magic wand and could wave it, I would say at least 2 months. What would you say?
Yeah, I agree, because something that sometimes, depending on how pregnant you were prior to, something that gets overlooked is the idea that like you're in a mini postpartum. And so depending on how old the baby was prior to the loss, you may experience, like postpartum sweats and some funky, like maybe even a little hair loss stuff. Like there, it's not just like, oh, it didn't work. Okay, whatever. There's no effect on my body. No, everything in your body started changing the second that there was conception. And so the hormone shifts, the cardiovascular shifts, the other endocrine shifts, the everything can take time. And yeah, I think the rush to get pregnant again is so real. And it feels like, oh my gosh, you want a newborn in your arms yesterday. And it all can feel so daunting, like the timing of it all. It really does feel so daunting. And you just have to try to stay grounded with yourself of, will taking like 1 or 2 additional months matter that much in my like wish and want for a baby, when it might make a huge difference in the way my body feels this next time around having a pregnancy? And just all of the different pregnancy sequelae. We don't want to go into pregnancy depleted if we have the choice. Sometimes people don't, like, and it just happens, or they didn't know, or whatever. And like that's its own thing. But yeah, I agree with you. Like 2 to 3 months would be my overall recommendation for sure.
And now, a quick word from our sponsor. We've partnered with Nita to bring you this episode. Stress is something that many people can experience along the fertility journey, and it's something that influences how they handle oxidative damage. That's why supporting overall cellular health can be super valuable at any stage along the fertility journey. One product I personally love recommending is Needed's Egg Quality Support. I helped contribute to formulating this product, but even if I hadn't, I would still be confident recommending it because it's so great. It's designed to provide antioxidant and mitochondrial support with ingredients like L-carnitine, green tea extract, ALA, and PQQ. I also love pairing it with Needed's comprehensive prenatal and their CoQ10 for a comprehensive approach. Visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20% off your first order. Again, visit thisisneeded.com and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 20%. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Okay, back to the show. Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, everyone has their own process on honoring the baby. Sometimes people just do it in their own silent way. Sometimes people do like a mini burial, or they journal or plant a tree, or there's so many different things that you can do. But if that's important to you to sort of have that closure before you open up the window for the next, you know, trying season, I think that that can help. I am also a huge fan of emotional processing. So whether that's going to therapy, doing some sort of breath work or somatic therapy, EMDR or other trauma therapy, internal family systems is a form of therapy that I love a lot. Maybe working with someone in your church, talking to a pastor, or if you're more spiritual, like an intuitive or somebody to just help you process what has happened. Because the hardest thing about miscarriages is for some people, it is the death of a loved one that no one sees or knows about. Mm. Like, you know, when you lose grandma, everyone's like, oh my God, like they're there for you. You know, they bring you soup, and like everyone understands that. And it's like, we understand that you need time off work. Like, oh my gosh, you just lost somebody so important to you. And there's just this cultural understanding of loss of people who are living. But when you have a loss in a miscarriage, for so many, I mean, it's like you were their mother, even especially if it's later term, for many months sometimes, yet you're expected to just go on with life, and no one knows it, no one cares about it. Like, it's just a really hard, challenging place to be. And so getting whatever support that you need to make that feel, you know, helpful.
Good. Well, in that situation. And two, this is sort of like, I know everybody's going to have their different choice on whether or not they tell people that they're pregnant, but a lot of people may not even know that you were pregnant. And so then you're suffering with this in silence, and that can be really tricky too. It's, yeah, there's a lot of dynamics that are at play.
There's so many things. So once you feel ready and you're like, okay, I'm ready to dive back in, or maybe you're not quite ready to try, but you do want to start taking some steps of optimizing or trying to, you know, prevent this. Again, inside of Womanhood Wellness, I would say the majority of the people in my membership are in this situation where they've had a loss and they are now here learning, how do I not have this again? Like, how do I do things different next time? What can I do to just help myself, even if they're not quite ready to try? Some are trying, and some have gone on and gotten pregnant. Like, I'm literally thinking of one in particular who it just makes me so happy. And so there's just a lot of support if you need that from the mental, emotional, and the physical. But some things to just highlight are making sure that you and your partner are working on your health, because 50% of miscarriage is from male factor. And I cannot tell you how many men don't seem to care or play an active role in the fertility picture. And it's not that it's like their fault. It's like, ooh, shame on you. I'm going to blame you for this loss. But just especially in recurrent loss, like, if, like, you need to have a serious conversation with your partner, and he needs to really buck up and like figure this out. If he's unwilling to do anything, and you've either had a loss or have recurrent losses, because this is leading to sadness and suffering for you. And we need to at least be doing, you know, helping him in some way, because he's 50% of it, you know?
Yeah, and some men are so anti-sperm tests. They like really don't want to even do a sperm test. And I'm like, but it's the easiest thing. I know.
It's such an ego thing. It makes, I know it's like such a tender time and people process in their own way, but it's like I know this sounds spicy and probably like too spicy, but it's just like your wife or your partner is suffering, whether because she wants a baby in infertility or she's had a loss, and you are too in your ego because you don't want to see if your sperm is bad. Like, what does it
Yeah, is
matter?
that
I
what it is? They
just.
just don't, they don't, they're like nervous that it's going to come back bad and then they don't want to see
I
it.
don't know. I mean, I've had patients whose their male partner's like, there's nothing wrong with me. Like, I don't need to test my sperm. I'm fine. I'm like, that's so toxic. I don't even know how to like
Also, what would make you
classify
think,
that.
what would make you say that, Mr. Doctor, sir? What makes you think
Yeah.
you
And then it's like,
have?
okay. And if you aren't like of that mentality, then what is the problem? Because it's not that expensive in the relative, cost of everything. And it's just information. It's just data. You just say, okay, your sperm is needs help or it doesn't, but we need to know what's going on. I don't
I
know. It's
know, I
just,
know, I don't know.
it irks me on so many levels. I can't even tell you. And so at the minimum, making sure that you both are supporting your egg and your sperm quality. So things like CoQ10 is a huge one of my favorites. Omega-3, fatty acids, lots of antioxidants. If you choose Needed's product, we have an egg quality support that I helped design and a sperm support plus. Those are both designed to go with the prenatal for the woman and the men's multi for the man, with CoQ10. So those are like three products for each. Obviously you can share them. And then the omega-3s, that's kind of like the classic bundle that I would put a lot of people on. But the thing that you guys need to know, especially with sperm, is it takes 3 months, 72 days is the minimum. And so getting him on the support right away is very important. Even if he's unwilling to do a sperm test, if he's at least willing to take the supplements and work on his diet, limiting sauna and working on stress and all of that stuff, it's just what breaks my heart is the time that just goes by and by and by, or another loss, and then we finally test sperm and realize that it was him, and that there was so much more that we need to be looking at. So, I would just love for that not to be your story. It's sort of the hill I'm always dying on, which is like men's fertility matters. So the next thing is just your ovulation and your luteal phase, which is a big part of your role in having a healthy pregnancy. So I talk about this to length, but testing your mid-luteal phase progesterone if you can. That means a week after you ovulate, if you can test your ovulation. This is tricky because when you've had a loss, you were pregnant. Just like Dr. Morgan said, you are in a state of postpartum. And your hormones might not jump back right away. You might not just go into, okay, now I'm just like ovulating on, day 14 of my 28-day cycle, just like right back like clockwork. Some people that happens for, and some people it
I'd
doesn't.
say the vast majority it doesn't though. Like it takes a couple
No.
cycles to sort of, they can be really wacky and it's rude because sometimes you have a long cycle and you think, oh my gosh, I'm pregnant. And then you're not. It's just really things, I don't know.
Did you know proper hydration and mineral balance are key for hormone health, fertility, and preparing for pregnancy? This is why Dr. Morgan and I love Relight by Redmond's, the real salt people. A USA-made electrolyte powder with unrefined sea salt, over 60 trace minerals, plus bioavailable forms of potassium, calcium, and two forms of magnesium, malate and glycinate. These minerals support hormones, hydration, energy, and overall health. The best part is they taste delicious. I'm really picky about how things taste, and so you can rest assured this is Dr. Leah approved. I love lemon lime, but I know Dr. Morgan is a strawberry lemonade gal. Head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15% off your order of electrolytes, real sea salt, natural toothpaste, and so much more. Again, head to redmond.life and use code HEALTHYMOTHER to save 15%. Happy hydrating on your womanhood and fertility journey. Yeah. So it can really take time. I mean, there are things you can do, like Vitex is an herb, obviously always work with your doctor, that can kind of help bring the cycle back, support the luteal phase and those kind of things. But it can just take time. But once you feel like you are ovulating, if you're tracking that, then testing that mid-luteal phase progesterone can be really helpful. And if it's low, if it's less than 15, chances are that that was playing a role in your loss, and or it could play a role in your future loss. There are lots of things that you can do to support progesterone. I will refer you to our progesterone episode. But you might be a person who needs that extra support, and you have to talk to your doctor about getting that, either vaginal or oral. And again, I would love to just sit down all of the people that go to medical school and help women and understand why they're so resistant to supporting women with progesterone. I don't understand it. It makes no sense to me. But just know that there's a high likelihood that your doctor will not want to prescribe you progesterone. One, because most people in the conventional world, unless you've had two or more losses, don't care. They don't, it's not a diagnosis. You don't have recurrent pregnancy loss until you've lost two or more. And they just, I don't understand it. They don't really do a lot of mid-luteal phase testing, which they should. They don't think that it matters. I don't know. I'm confused. Not to like bash them all. I hope that we can all come together and help women because the majority of my life is trying to help them get progesterone to save their pregnancies. And I'm like, this should not be the case. It's not a harmful thing. I'm like, what is the deal? And most people don't even see their OB-GYN until I've had called clinics for my own self and they would not even see me. They literally will not let me come into the office until I'm 10, 12 weeks pregnant. So I couldn't even see the doctor before that, even if I wanted to.
You'd also think
And
like
then a lot
it's like someone needs to position it to them that like, hey, this is another way for you to prescribe a pharmaceutical and make money, and then they'll be down for it.
No. Well, I'm like, you guys love prescribing
I
things.
know.
Like, this is what you
Not
do.
progesterone though.
Prescribing.
They won't do it. I don't know.
It's so weird. I mean, some will. It's just know that it's not like a common thing, like going to a psychiatrist with depression and getting Lexapro. Like, that is like a very normal thing that like everyone does for the most part. And to walk into your doctor and be like, I've had a pregnancy loss. I've checked my progesterone and they're low. I need progesterone. You would think it'd be like, oh, of course. Absolutely. Here you go. And it's not always that case. So you might have to doctor shop around a little bit and find someone who is open. Obviously, naturopathic doctors, if you live in a state that you have access to them, and they can prescribe, to support you, are an option. But there are great doctors out there. It's just, traditional primary care doctors aren't always trained in OB-GYN stuff or endocrinology, so they don't necessarily always know. And endocrinologists don't typically do stuff with pregnancy, and gynecologists don't always necessarily know endocrinology. It's just like there's a huge missing gap, but hopefully your doctor is chill and on board and can support because that can be the difference between a loss and a baby. And I see it in practice with my patients all the time. And it just makes me just want to shake everybody. So something that is important. So refer to the progesterone episode about additional things to do there. Calming inflammation is another big thing. So this might be a time to look at, signs of inflammation if you have chronic joint pain or you have gut issues, if you are constantly kind of having upset stomachs after you eat, if you have weird bowel movements, checking your thyroid, looking at if there's any chronic infections. This might be a really great time to also check your vaginal microbiome. I have had a lot of patients and people in womanhood wellness as well who did like an Evi test, which looks at your vaginal microbiome on a much bigger scale than just what you get done at the OB-GYN's office when they do like a quick swab. And they will find things that are contributing to hidden infections that are leading to inflammation or immune system dysregulations that, once treated appropriately, they end up pregnant and have a healthy baby because, like, that amount of inflammation and infection that was going on in the vagina, that is maybe making its way up into the uterus, was impacting the growth of their baby. So that's another thing to definitely look at.
Yeah.
And then, oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say that one I think is gonna be an upcoming field. It's gonna be, all the microbe research stuff is still just the tip of the iceberg of what we're gonna know in the future. And it sounds like, oh, come on, but I bet we're gonna find out in the future that the intravaginal and intrauterine microbiome is like, there's gonna become like a specific probiotic that's very fertility based that I mean is beyond the things that already exist. It's gonna do multiple actions or whatever and have huge impacts
Yeah,
for
I mean,
people.
it kind of already is. Like, seed has the Lactobacillus crispatus, which there's only like two or three companies in like the whole world that seems to have this strain. I don't know why it's so hard to
I don't
get.
know.
It's like, that's crazy. So Lactobacillus rhamnosus and reuteri are two known helpful ones, but crispatus is even better. There's some other lactobacilluses as well, and so getting actual like vaginal stuff. But if you have a bad bacteria that is really impacting things or yeast or whatever, you do want to treat them. And sometimes that does require an antibiotic. Like sometimes you can do it naturally, but sometimes you actually really need to get rid of it. Mm-hmm. And that's where doing that testing and knowing, and you're not going to get this kind of information. The tests that they test for at the OB-GYN's office are pretty basic. Gonorrhea, chlamydia, you know, a few others, yeast and things like that. But a lot of the bacteria that tend to cause functional imbalances are not going to be caught on those normal tests. So that's why I do love tests like Evie. And then also looking, again, a lot of doctors will not investigate if you have only had one loss. They will not. Insurance won't cover it. They won't investigate. They want you to have two losses before they diagnose you as recurrent pregnancy loss, which I think is so sad and such a tragedy, even though it is very common. Like I said, 1 in 4 pregnancies will end in a loss, and a lot of women go on and have a totally healthy pregnancy. I mean, that's why they don't do it. It's just so common for there not to be an actual issue.
So it's hard to know. Like, I can imagine I would be thinking this if I was listening and I wasn't a doctor and I was just like, okay, so then what do I do if I've had one loss? Do I go and do all this additional testing, or do I just kind of like try again? You know, I guess it's hard to say. It's sort of, well, what do you want to do?
This is what I would do.
Yeah.
This is what I would do. You can do whatever you want to do, but this is what I would do. If I had one loss, I would immediately get my husband on a good support, me as well, just making sure we're covering all of our bases that are good to go. I would check in on if there's any emotional processing that I still need to do. Like, do I have sadness still about the loss? Are there other blockages? Do I actually have a fear about, you know, being a mother? Like, what, all the stuff. I would see a therapist to do some sort of processing of that. I would check my progesterone as soon as I could. As soon as I was ovulating again, I would check mid-luteal phase progesterone, because to me, those are the three most easy common things that do not hurt you and play a role regardless. Mm-hmm. Okay. Am I going to go do like a whole clotting workup and go check for like natural killer cells and autoimmune? Not necessarily. I think that is what's more appropriate once you've had two losses or more. Okay. But the progesterone, getting support for your egg and his sperm, and processing anything emotionally, I think are three very essential, easy things, in my opinion. Most common, you know, we're hitting chromosomal abnormalities, low progesterone, and like any mental emotional blockages. Now, if you are someone who finances is not a huge barrier, and or you are just curious, and or you are terrified to have another loss, then maybe you do want to do a more thorough workup right away. Mm-hmm. So that might be looking at, you know, thyroid antibodies, looking at ANA, anti-nuclear antigen. This is just telling if there's systemic autoimmunity going on. You might want to do like a simple clotting panel just to see if that's a factor. And so there's definitely some things that you can do. I would absolutely do all of that if you've had two losses or more.
Okay.
But that is where you would be technically diagnosed with recurrent pregnancy loss. I'm pretty sure it's two. I always get this confused if it's two or three, but I'm pretty sure it's two, where insurance might cover it at that point. So it's something to look into with your insurance. Because once you have a diagnosis, that's when they can bill things, right? It's all about putting you in a box.
No, I was just laughing.
Oh, you're just laughing. Yeah, I know. Lost. So that's what I would do. And so,
okay. Thanks for sharing. Yeah. Because I know that people are going to wonder, like, well, do I, you know, I had one last year, it's been 6 months. Do I do all this now? Or, you know, or they're just, it'll be helpful, I think, to hear that, how you would sort of go through and how you'd think about it.
Yeah. And I would also be doing this, the things you can do again, that are only going to support you, like balancing blood sugar and working on your circadian rhythm and, you know, working on your stress and all of these things that is never going to hurt you. It's only going to help you. As far as like intense, I would also test my husband's sperm. Like, that is one test I would do. Just to like see, but it doesn't, you don't necessarily have to do a DNA fragmentation test of your husband's sperm yet or your partner's sperm. I would do that though in recurrent pregnancy loss for sure. So there's some things to do if it's one loss versus two or more. And then, that can get all into a lot of stuff I won't get into on this episode of just the immune system and all sorts of different factors and things at play and the things that you can do. If you guys want to dive deeper into that, you should definitely join Womanhood Wellness. I have a whole course on it and a lot of support there. But basically, yeah, that's kind of where I would start. If you've had a loss, make sure you understand your choices, are processing, sort of know what kind of some of the root causes are. It's never your fault. We don't always know. We don't have a crystal ball. There are a lot of things that you can optimize and investigate. And there's definitely that level that I would do if it's one loss versus two, or if it's early loss versus late term loss. Like, there's a lot of nuance there, but I think that's a really good place to start.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. I think the emotional integration piece is another one that is often skirted by in the rush of everything. And not to say that it will prevent you from not getting pregnant again, but it also is something that maybe our culture doesn't put as much emphasis on. And there should be something like even to just go sit in nature for like an hour and let yourself cry and just kind of process it and be like, wow, that sucked. And this or this sucks, if it's continuing to or it's in the middle of happening, and have some time to like think about it and be sad and not just buck up in toxic positivity and shove it down somewhere else. And it just doesn't help anybody. It doesn't serve anything. Our nervous systems need to process it. And as mothers and women, it's a huge deal. I always say this because actually you were saying that like so many women in your membership have had miscarriages, and so many women in my 6-week pregnancy call right now have had miscarriages, like almost any, like the vast majority of them. And it's not a small thing. The second that you see those two pink lines, it's like, okay, calculate out the due date, plan your whole life. And our brains can
I
do
know.
so much thinking and getting excited in just a couple of hours. And it's yeah, even if you're only, 4 or 5, 6 weeks pregnant or something like that, when the loss happens, it's still horrific. It's still heartbreaking. It's still such a big deal. So really just letting yourself honor that, I think, is huge.
Yeah, and that it is more than just even the loss of the baby. It is the loss of your whole life. It's the loss of the sibling, or it's the loss of the grandchild, or the loss of, being pregnant with your friend. That's it's
Oh.
so hard. I mean, I remember that even with you and me.
Oh.
When you were pregnant with Gage and I was trying and I was like, oh my God, like I'm not gonna have kids with my best friend. It was just so sad. And like, look at Gage, he's what, almost he's 10. And AB's 4, so 6 years went by, and there is a difference. Like, when your friends have kids at different ages, you kind of go into different places. And for me, that was a huge part of the loss of I feel behind now. There's just so
Oh,
much that
so
people feel,
much.
and it's just a lot. So just honor that. I would highly recommend finding someone to help you process all of that and just the whole journey. And like I said, if you want community and my guidance as well to join Womanhood Wellness. But I hope that that was helpful, and I'm giving all of you a big hug. And if a loss isn't something you've experienced, please share this with somebody who has, if you know of anybody. And even if you don't know, chances are, one in every four women of the people that you know have probably had one, and you might not even know it. So I think it's just helpful for people to get this information much more than maybe that they're getting other places. So.
For sure. Yeah. Thank you for going in that depth. And we will talk with you guys next week.
Already on the path, and it hasn't been going as you imagined. I want you to know that you do not have to do this alone. Consider joining me inside of my Womanhood Wellness membership. You get a custom blueprint unique to your womanescence type, which is where you are right now on the journey. You have access to all of my courses and content, which includes how to boost egg and sperm quality, the energetics of fertility, investigating fertility, optimizing IVF if that's a path you have to go down, navigating pregnancy loss. I have my Essential Foundations course where you learn all the things that you really need to know to have a thriving hormonal infertility system. You learn the Hormone Handbook, where I dive deep into all the different hormonal imbalances and what you can do naturally to rebalance them. I have deep dive courses on vaginal microbiome, in detoxing, on mindset. I give you my natural medicine protocols. You have the ability to order labs on your own. You get discounts on supplements and other products. I have organized the community by your season. So if you are breaking up with birth control, you can jump in a chat with women in that exact same season. If you are trying to conceive, or if you are going through pregnancy loss or infertility or IVF or low libido, there is a group of women who are going through the same thing. We also have full community areas like our breakfast club, where every Monday we share what we're having for breakfast to inspire each other, and our daily flow, where we connect as a collective community and do challenges and learn from each other in that way. On top of all of that, I do a monthly live Q&A where you can bring your questions, and they're always recorded so you can listen if you can't make them live. And then I have various calls with other practitioners like Sadie, our amazing personal development coach, and so many others, where you will be able to receive healing and learn other perspectives. Being a member inside Womanhood Wellness also gives you discounts to join my upcoming immersions. Take around 22 women for a month to dive deep into a specific topic like decoding desire or building your dream life or navigating painful periods or navigating unexplained infertility. This is the place that you want to be if you want to know all of the natural root cause and supportive measures that you can take to optimize your womanhood journey and your path to and through motherhood. Head to womanhoodwellness.com and use code podcast to save 20% off your first month. I can't wait to see you inside. In order for others to hear this information, please leave a review with Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share with a friend who would benefit from this content. Please remember that the views and ideas from this podcast are for informational purposes only and are not intended to be a substitute for medical care of any kind, including the diagnosis and treatment of any disease. Consult with your provider before integrating any of this information into your own healthcare plan. A healthier future starts now, and it starts with you.